Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's a beautiful, nice and sunny Thursday in St. Louis. We've got a little playoff baseball going on right now. Wasn't too crazy about the fact that the Dodgers won so quickly, Fred, but I guess the Dodgers. I really got to root for the Red Sox today, I think, because I don't want to see Dodgers and Yankees again.
Oh, good point.
That would be my position on everything. All right, so as we get rolling here, we have, do we have technical difficulties testing? 1, 2. Sue, are you there? Yeah, she's not there. I'm not sure what's going on with that. So that's a halt. That's an altogether different issue that's way above my pay grade. We're trying to Sue, and I think that in the effort of full disclosure, I've done this before as to not fake out the audience. Sue is here 95% of the time sitting right next to me, but she's had some, personal business to deal with, and when she does the traffic in the morning, she does it at home, which simplifies everything. Are you there yet? Are you there yet? No, we do not have her. That is not a good situation, unfortunately. All right, Fred, it's going to be you and I chatting here in the open. Hope you have something to talk about here. Let me kind of lay out the show just quickly here because Carl Cannon's going to join us from Real Clear Politics. He's the Washington Bureau Chief. He's been around D.C. for a long time. He's been around a lot of D.C. shutdowns, I'm guessing, Fred. So we'll have Carl's perspective. And look, one of the things I like about Carl is he's pretty much a straight reporter.
He calls him the way he sees
Yeah, he's going to offer you some opinions, but he's not afraid to be critical of Trump when Trump needs to be criticized. One of the things, did you hear, maybe I can do this right now.
It's kind of like Real Clear Politics, which they'll give you both sides of everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, Real Clear really does do that, which is one of the reasons that he's one of the bureau chiefs there, because it is one of those sites where you can, literally go on there every day. People ask me that question, like, where do you go? What are your news sources? Well, I subscribe to a lot of different things, but if you go to realclearpolitics.com, you'll just see every day, and sometimes they update it for the afternoon, a list of op-eds, opinion pieces, different news pieces, and they're back and forth, on one side, like say it's the shutdown, the Democrat side is shut down, here's a viewpoint, Republican side, here's a viewpoint. So it's a great way because it essentially just kind of collates all the news that's out there, and they also have Real Clear markets. In fact, on that note, John Tammy's a guy that we've had on before. I think it's been a little while. He's the editor of Real Clear Markets, and he's written a book, and the book came out a couple of months ago. It's called Deficit Delusion, Why Everything Left, Right, and Supply Side Tells You About the National Debt is Wrong. And this kind of surprises me a little bit because I've talked about Medicaid and Social Security, in particular Medicare reform, in order to solve some of these problems. John is actually taking it in a completely different direction. Now, unfortunately, both of our approaches are not feasible because in this particular political era, I don't think it's possible. So my perspective would be you've got to have people who are serious about entitlement reform. Republicans need to be honest about this, but they won't be because they're worried about their next election. John's position is forget about all that, right? We need to reduce the amount of taxes being collected in this country because once we send it there, they spend it. and they love to spend it. And that's what's happened ever since, you know, I voted for Ronald Reagan in 1984. As a fiscal conservative, I've always wanted the size and scope of government to be reduced, including the amount of spending. John Tammany says, look, they're spending all this money because we're sending them this money.
So
right?
He's saying turn off the spigot.
Yeah, he is like significantly turn off the spigot. It's an interesting approach. But again, it, to a certain extent, I think it's fantasy land because there's no way. Look where we are right now. You got, you know, Chuck Schumer shutting down the government, and you have Republicans saying Chuck Schumer's just shutting down the government because he's afraid of the AOC Senate matchup. AOC says, I got nothing to do with this. And then they start talking about health care. There's so much back and forth here. It's hard to know exactly, you know, what's going on and what's true. Here's Speaker Mike Johnson.
Let's make absolutely clear what's happening here. Real pain is being inflicted upon the American people because 44 Democrats in the Senate have voted for the third time to reject the completely nonpartisan, completely clean, very simple 24-page continuing resolution that we passed in the House here 2 weeks ago.
You know, one of the things that the Democrats want is they want this money back for NPR and PBS, to which I say, F you, Democrats, no way, we're not giving you that money back. And there was somebody, I can't remember which NPR affiliate, somebody went out there and took a stand yesterday from NPR and said, look, this is the first day that we don't have our funding, but we're still going to be there for you, covering the news. Okay, good. Do it. I don't care if you want to do that. We don't want to give you our money to do it, right? We don't want to subsidize you. I don't get subsidized for doing this show. I depend on sponsors. And so maybe this is all going to work out just fine, right? But Speaker Johnson makes it clear that's one of the things I want here.
They proposed a wild list of partisan priorities. Among them, they want to return $500 million to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to prop up left-leaning and biased media organizations. We're not doing that. The American people don't want us to do that. We don't need the Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded by taxpayers anymore because we're in their age of ubiquitous media. There's, what, 200 of you guys here? There's so many outlets. We don't need to do that. We're not going to do that.
And then he talked about the rural hospital situation.
They want to remove the rural hospital fund that Republicans fought so hard to put into the One Big Beautiful Bill. We set $50 billion aside to take care of rural hospitals. Why would Chuck Schumer want to get rid of that? I don't know. A lot of those rural hospitals are in red states. You have to decide for yourself what the motivations are here. But they say they're for health care. Why would they want to do that?
So I have to play. I won't play the AI. I don't think I have it in here. But you know the AI Schumer bit?
Yeah.
Ethan's busy now. We're trying to get Sue on the air, and I can't bother him to put that in the audio file. But basically, in case you missed it, I played a couple of times the last couple of days. You have Chuck Schumer saying things that are just ridiculous because it's AI generated, and it's satire. And in the video that they put out, that the White House put out, there was Hakeem Jeffries standing next to Chuck Schumer with a sombrero on that was kind of like tilting back and forth.
And a mustache.
And a mustache, right. So it was a meme, and they felt it was racist. That, of course, it's racist. I'm not sure how it's racist. J.D. Vance said that yesterday. But, Fred, I swear to God, I can't help myself. This really, it's the last month. I have to listen to CNN because they're just unhinged on this stuff. Really, really unhinged. So here's, because they're not happy. Caitlin Collins, that's who I hear when I get off the air. See, usually, you know, I've told you this. I listen to Laura.
Right.
But I've been putting on Caitlin Collins because they're, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel stuff, they were apoplectic. They don't like the sombrero stuff. So then she's, you know, being asked about this on CNN last night.
So we played sound from Vice President Vance, not just defending that AI racist video of Minority Leader Jeffries wearing a sombrero.
I love it. Okay. Okay, here, let's John Berman. Okay. This is what I love about the media. The racist, he just declares it, the racist video. John, why is it a racist video? See, what a journalist would do is they would say that they say is racist, right? John Berman, as a journalist, should say that Hakeem Jeffries says is racist. Not that it is racist. That's not his job to declare that. It's his job to declare that it's not racist because it's not racist, but that's just one little pickup there.
But also, like, celebrating that video, and it was playing on a loop in the briefing room today. What are you hearing from the inside about that?
It was not only just playing on a loop in the briefing room. If you've never been in the press briefing room, for those who haven't, there are loudspeakers overhead so you can hear announcements or what's being said, or if there is an event going on with the president in the Rose Garden, for example. They were playing that mariachi music as well over the loudspeakers.
I have been in that room, by the way, Fred. I've been in there with Lisa.
That's right.
Lisa Desjardins, who actually, I like Lisa a lot. She works for PBS and the PBS NewsHour, and I think she's safe in her job despite the cut in funding, but she gave me a great tour one time when I was in D.C. many years ago.
For all the press that was coming in and out of the White House today inside the press briefing room. It just kind of gives you a window, John, into how they're dealing with this and how they believe they have the upper hand when it comes to the messaging here, and also kind of how things have changed from the first time Donald Trump was in office. I mean, there was a shutdown then. I remember all 35 days of it. As the president said at the beginning, he'd be proud to shut the government down, and then it ended, obviously, with him not getting the money for his border wall. This time, you know, there's a moment here. They're being heavily criticized over this, over these posts by the president, by Democrats, and instead of backing off or apologizing for it, they're leaning into it, and they're playing the music over loudspeakers and on repeat inside the briefing room because they simply don't care about that criticism.
And it's kind of funny, too. And it works, but they get so, you know, these journalists with a capital J, they take themselves so seriously. And I know these people because I used to be one of them. I used to be an embarrassing journalist with a capital J. I was a news director. I was a news anchor for a while before I went to Straight Talk. And you know, look, I understand, and I'm a person who in the past has criticized the Trump administration. Like during the first administration, some of you might even remember this. You know, this whole thing about whether it's presidential or not, right? We've given that up a long time ago. And anything that could be considered inappropriate or deemed somewhat racist when you're joking around and poking a little fun here, all of that matters not at all to me. Not at all. And the reason is because of what happened between 20 and 2024. There was no effort to ask that administration anything seriously. It's interesting because I love the role, and I think we knew that there was going to be a role for J.D. Vance that was different than other and past vice presidents. I think that it's very, very clear that 9 months, 10 months into this administration, J.D. Vance is playing an incredibly important role with the messaging in particular. And it's not like he's taking it over from, you know, President Trump. President Trump's out there all the time answering questions as well. Now, on the topic of the shutdown, let me kind of lay this out here for the show. I want to play a little bit of audio here before we get to the break. Carl Cannon's coming up. And we have Edward Ring from the Center for American Greatness, who will talk about the 10 years of censorship that really was censored between 2015 and 2025. That's not getting nearly enough attention. We have Suze News in the next hour. Curtis Houck will join us from Newsbusters to talk about the liberal reaction to the shutdown. Also, there's an interesting trust in the legacy media poll, which doesn't go very well for the legacy media. Congresswoman Ann Wagner is going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. Mark Sutherland. Mark's a friend. He's got an official title, His Majesty's Honorary Consul of Great Britain and Northern Ireland to the state of Missouri. He's also the owner of the Stone Ledge Distillery in Defiance. And we're going to talk to him about a couple of different things, including British Airways soon to start those direct flights between Lambert and Heathrow. We might actually be able to call ourselves an international airport now. I know we've been going to Germany here for a few years, but wow, I thought that was a big deal. So we'll discuss that. I mentioned John Tamney, the editor of Real Clear Markets. He'll be with us to talk about some of this deficit stuff, and I'll have audio cut of the day. Now, we had this situation. Fred, you're going to have to help me out with this one because this is one of the first things that I saw this morning, and I just can't believe it happened again. I think we could both admit that it has not been the best year for the aviation industry, right?
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
So two Delta Airlines regional jets collided.
It was a low speed collision, right? On the runway.
Taxiway at LaGuardia.
Right. One of the wings clipped the fuselage of another plane.
Fair to say that could have been a lot worse.
There were like more than 90 people on both planes.
Yeah, so the aircraft that was carrying 32 people was getting ready for takeoff to Roanoke, Virginia. And that's the aircraft that had the wing made contact with the fuselage of this aircraft that was arriving from Charlotte, North Carolina. They had 61 people on board. The NTSB says it happened at the intersection of two taxiways. They sent a team of 10 investigators. Flight recorders have been recovered from both airplanes. It wasn't clear, according to the story and the reporting, who was at fault. But air traffic control had instructed the Virginia-bound plane to hold short and yield to the other aircraft before the collision. So here's a little of the aircraft, you know, tower chatter.
City truck on Alpha. See emergency truck, sir?
paper. We have two DRJs on mic that collided.
Well, it sounds to me like the one that was coming in was not paying attention, and they didn't listen to what they said, so then they had to report this.
You guys did clip, correct? Yeah, we did. Their right wing clipped our nose and the cockpit.
Do you have any injuries on board?
We have one injury to a flight attendant.
It was a flight attendant that was hurt, probably knocked over by the impact. But good Lord, I mean, look, it's still the safest form of travel out there, but this has been a year for the record books, and unless we're just hearing about these things more often. But that type of thing, especially in the aftermath of all the other, you know, air disasters, you would think they'd have a better handle on that from the tower to say, you know, we got to be careful about this stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. My son Shane was at LaGuardia just hours before.
Really?
He flew into St. Louis yesterday afternoon, last night, but he flew on Southwest, so he wasn't in the Delta section. He was right there.
And they had to take, you know, everybody had to leave both of those planes. They put them up in a hotel, and they got them off today. But that would kind of freak you out,
yeah.
I think. All right, well, we have, Sue will have to tell me the answer. Is the technology so bad that we have to do that? I'm just going to ask you before I play the traffic sounder. Testing, 1, 2. Now we have you on the phone, right? What are we going to do here? Do we know?
Oh, you know what? They've given me instructions on what to do, and I've got this little pointer, and I'm pointing things and putting in IP addresses. Let's just not hold out too much hope, but I think I might have done something.
Okay.
I don't know if it's positive.
Okay, but we'll do this one on the phone, right?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. Well, Sue's going to be in the studio tomorrow for sure. We have some remote location technical difficulties here this afternoon that we're working on. Don't forget, tomorrow's a Friday. That means we have a Reardon Roundtable. We will toss around all the stories of the week locally and nationally with State Rep Steve Butts, State Senator Nick Schwer, and John Gaskin, former head of the NAACP in St. Louis County. All be here tomorrow on the show. Here is the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, on the government shutdown.
They feel better fighting. And I think that if Schumer and Jeffries had tried to cave early, that they would have been thrown out, because the base out there wants a fight. They don't care if they win or not. They just have to emotionally be involved in fighting Donald Trump. And the result's going to be the country's watching.
So we have one of the best Washington, D.C. correspondents in history with us, Carl Cannon. How about that for a lead-in this afternoon from Real Clear Politics? How are you, Carl?
I'll take it, Mark.
Well, you've been around, safe to say you've been around a fair amount of government shutdowns and situations like this, right?
This is probably the eighth one I've covered.
So what's different about this one? And here's what I'm trying to determine. I don't see how the Democrats get out of this. I really don't. I don't see where their leverage is. And I know this healthcare thing is really their talking point. I think that polls very well. We're already looking at what might happen in the midterms. But what's your gut check here on how this might resolve itself? And will it be 35 days like the last time? Will it, you know, will this get over by next week? Or what are you hearing on Capitol Hill right now?
Well, there's several things that are different this time, Mark. One is that the Democrats are doing something odd. Their talking point is the Republicans closed the government. Now, there was a vote in the Senate. Republicans voted to keep it open. Democrats voted to close it. And they don't care. They're just repeating this.
Right.
The second thing is they're saying that the Republicans are lying when they say that any federal money goes to people who are not American citizens, that this is a big lie. Joe Scarborough the other day used the word like 30 times. It's their talking point. The third thing that's different is that we're so siloed now. you know, Democrats read their sources and watch their TV and listen to their radio, and Republicans do theirs. So Democrats, unless you're paying attention to this full time, if you're just ordinary working American and you're a Democrat, you think, oh, I guess the Republicans close the
right,
government.
Absolutely.
And they're banking on that.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's one of the things that's pretty clear. Well, because that's what, that was what I said earlier this week, that the narrative, look, I think that you have some polling out there that shows that the Democrats might get the blame. But look, you let the accumulation on the legacy media where they blame, you know, the Republicans for this, it's going to add up. Now, on point number two that you mentioned, because honest to God, Carl, I can't determine who's telling the truth or not on the migrant issue for the health care. I do know, you know, Rand Paul kind of explained this pretty well, and he's against the CR, he always is, but I think there's certainly truth to it. There have been things that have happened, and some of this stuff has fallen through the cracks, but you got Joe Scarborough and the Democrats saying, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie. You have people like Ann Wagner, my congresswoman from right here, she's going to come on in a couple hours saying, no, it's not a lie. So what is the truth in the middle there a little bit? Is there nuance? What is your take on that?
Look, there's billions of dollars that goes in health care costs every year to treat people who don't have papers. That's just a fact. It's a federal law since 1986 that if anybody in America who shows up in an emergency room gets to be cared for.
They get treated,
well, those emergency rooms bill state or federal government for it. So, you know, money's fungible. The other thing is that several of these states have... You go to their websites, and it says right on there, citizen status is not a barrier to getting Medicare or Medicaid. It says it in black and white. I was talking to my colleagues about this. I think the Democrats have a principled argument. It's a New Testament argument, if you will. These people are here, however they got here. That's a separate issue. But they need medical care, and if they're poor, they have to get it. And who else can pay for it but the government? But that's not the argument the Democrats are making. They just prefer to gaslight people about it. I actually think they have a humane argument, but they're not making it. They're just spinning. They're just spinning and accusing the Republicans of lying when they are themselves lying. And I find it very disheartening. Do you remember this, Mark? In 2019, so 6 years ago, mm-hmm. the Democrats were all lined up. They were running for president, including Joe Biden. Would your health care plan take care for people who are not in the country legally? Every Democrat raised their hand.
Right.
They've gone in 6 years from bragging about this policy, which again, I think they have an argument, a humane argument, to bragging about it, to saying it's not their policy and the Republicans are lying when they say it. It's disheartening because the political discourse around this is so dishonest. And I blame the Democrats more than the Republicans on that.
So is it because AOC says, no, this isn't about me? The other thing the Republicans are saying, this is Schumer, who voted for the CR in the spring. He's worried about his primary next year with AOC in the Senate race.
That's right. When she says it's not about me, I know what she means. That's a nice phrase. But in one way, it's all about her. And that's what Mike Johnson said, the speaker. He said that Schumer had sort of orchestrated this shutdown for personal reasons. And what he meant was his personal political fortunes. I don't think it's enough to save him. But, you know, if he can't keep the government open because he's worried about a primary, in some very literal way, Mark, he's no longer the Democratic Party leader, is he, in the Senate?
Right.
Somebody else is.
Yeah. Well, that might be the reality of where we are right now. So, I don't know how it ends. Is there a possibility, because these Obamacare subsidies are in the mix as well, and those don't really expire. They shouldn't be in the conversation for the CR, but the Democrats want to make that part of the conversation. So are they looking for the president to make a commitment or Republicans to make a commitment to, you know, doing something on that before the end of the year?
I actually think you're right. That's a separate issue. There's some overlap, but that's where if you're looking for a way out, that's the face saving way out for both sides, because the way they've spoken about it, each other, and these memes with sombreros and everything. I mean, they're digging themselves in so that neither side can cave,
right.
But on the Obamacare subsidies, there's room, and the room for the compromises, because remember, this was all passed in the big, beautiful bill.
Right.
The Democrats all voted against it. It's not like to be fair to the Democrats, it's not like they had a change of heart. They weren't for it before. They voted for against it. And now they're trying to get a clawback for a law that just took effect. That's power politics. That's okay. But the question here is, where is that money going, those subsidies for Obamacare? Is it really going to people, working class people who live in states, you know, rural states, and they need this to sign up for the exchanges? There's some of that. Or is it going to these insurance companies? There's a study out that shows that some 12 million people are signed up for these, for the subsidies, for the exchanges, who never went to a doctor last year. Now, they obviously they went to a doctor, but they didn't use this insurance. So is that fraud? Is that insurance brokers signing people up without them knowing about it? Is it people have other insurance? The face-saving way out of this government shutdown to me is the Trump administration and the Democrats agree they'll get the fraud out of the system, but keep some of the money, give some of the money back for the exchanges, for the subsidies to Obamacare, for the people who really need it. If you were actually trying to govern instead of just score political points and, you know, be a jerk, that's where the compromise area is. And that's where they would be talking.
And one of the difficulties on that is, you know, just trying to figure out where the money is going. And even the Wall Street Journal, I believe it was the Journal earlier this week, talked about how there's a fair amount of these people out there who have employer plans that are more expensive, so they're staying on the exchange. They have a plan that could be, you know, used, but if you're paying $77 a month, you know, which is where it took you down to with the plan from several years ago. And now we're talking about essentially doubling that. It's like $154 a month. It's still very reasonable for healthcare, but you can see why people would make those choices. Carl, always great to have you on. We'll see if this thing gets wrapped up quickly. Have a great weekend.
You too, Mark.
All right, take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'd be the first to admit that there's a fair amount of hypocrisy on both sides of the political aisle. But honestly, in the past couple of weeks, ever since the Jimmy Kimmel thing, I think I've spat Diet Coke out of my nose listening to the CNN gang, in particular MSNBC, crying about censorship and the First Amendment. And my next guest, who has written about this, Edward Ring, had a great paragraph. And I'm going to read this before I welcome him. To those of us who follow the systemic suppression of unapproved content, it seems incredible that anyone can believe our mainstream news sources, pundits and journalists working for PBS, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, the list goes on, who are now proclaiming we have entered an era of unprecedented authoritarian censorship. This is a brazen lie, but people believe it. Edward Ring is a senior fellow at the Center for American Greatness. We just kind of talked about this with Carl Cannon. I mean, you repeat things long enough and you have the help of the legacy media, Edward, and then people start believing it, right?
Well, they not only believe it, but they're not receptive to any evidence. They just kind of have been conditioned to shut you down if you try to present, you know, what is just overwhelming evidence that this has been going on, and frankly going on with more intensity, more repressive intensity for 10 years on our side. And they simply can't imagine that that actually happened.
And it's not just a theory. It happened. Now there's been an admission by Google that it happened. Now, you said in your piece that you had a conversation with someone who is maybe a little bit more in the middle or left of center, and you heard that person basically saying the same thing, right? That, you know, this is a situation where Trump is taking away free speech. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. This country's never going to be the same, blah, blah, all this stuff, right?
I did. And this is somebody who's educated, intelligent, fairly open-minded, but absolutely unexposed to the other side. And, you know, another form of conditioning that has been happening is they don't even want, they've been conditioned to figure that anything that's presenting this alternative view of what's happened over the last decade
is lying. And so they don't even want to look at it. So, you know, you really have a hard time reasoning with somebody like that. And these are not bad people either. They just have never been exposed to the other side of the story.
And this is what gets very frustrating for me, because I have people in my world. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that the people in my universe lean more to the left than they do to the right. I have a lot of friends in the entertainment business. We choose not to talk about politics. I've only lost a couple of friendships here in the past couple of years, but unfortunately, those were painful. But what I say, and I've used my sister every once in a while engages on things, and she's definitely left of center, but she's sane. You know, she's not like AOC or anything. But when I try to convince her of trying to look through a different lens, I say, don't take my word for it as a conservative talk show host. Okay, put, you know, take my stuff out of the mix. But how about look at Yuri Berliner, who was an insider at NPR, and he was the guy that decided to expose it all. Okay, how about, and you mentioned these two guys, Mike Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi. I read Matt Taibbi for decades in Rolling Stone with his climate change alarmism and all this other crap, right? And then they realized that they were at the center of what they called the censorship industrial complex. And finally, along with a couple other people who were very liberal out there, Sasha Stone is another one. She came from Hollywood. I know Sasha, that said, we can't do this. And they tried to expose it. And even when it was happening in real time and most of us knew it was happening, the legacy media didn't want to cover it.
They didn't. There's also Barry Weiss with the New York Times. And, you know, these folks got before Congress and presented mountains of evidence. And, you know, so it wasn't just the social media companies. It was the government was. Now, I think they would have enthusiastically done this anyway, but the government was putting a lot of pressure on them at the same time. And that came out later. But 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 5 years ago, when this all got really, really in motion, we thought it was just the liberals running the social media companies. And as it turns out, they were doing that in complicity and in many cases under pressure from the State Department people in the government.
And that's outrageous. I mean, you want to talk about free speech issues, right? That's unbelievable. And the level of suppression was outrageous. But you also point out that some of this was deplatforming, right? So there were people that were taken off of YouTube or Twitter. One of the reasons that Elon Musk got involved is because he was pissed off at the Babylon Bee, which is a satirical site, was yanked off of Twitter. But then there was also, you described, the next level of suppression was denial of membership services. So what does that mean?
Well, that's right. I mean, the shadow ban was the start, where you wouldn't have any presence in the feed and they would delete your subscribers. And this is countless examples of that. But they would also demonetize you, where they would take away your ability to float ads into Google, you know, with the Google AdSense program. And then they would just throw you off the platform completely. But then there were all of the membership things. There was the Apple Store, there was Apple Podcasts, there was Spotify, and people got thrown out of there. Then there's the support networks, financial support networks like Patreon and GoFundMe. And when they threw people out, which they did, hundreds and hundreds of people were thrown out of those projects, you lose your whole base of support.
Yeah.
You have, if you have a 500,000 people giving you a monthly $5 a month, all of a sudden you have zero people and you have to go to a new processor and start all over. But then the back end of that, the PayPal and Stripe, those are the payment processors, you know, behind the interface. They all have to go through that to get into your bank. And they started throwing people off. And then WordPress actually deleted accounts. ISPs deleted Parler. WordPress deleted the conservative Treehouse, which had a million views, a month, which is not bad, a million to a million and a half views. The video platforms, JW Player, which Prager started using because they didn't want to rely on YouTube, JW Player canceled their application. So you're seeing applications, ISPs, banks, payment processors, payment aggregators, podcasts, Apple Store, all of them participated in this, and it's all very well documented.
Yeah, well, that's an important point, because this isn't just an accusation, even though, you know, there were certainly accusations that started all this, but now it has been proven and admitted to. So I don't know what the answer is to get people to look at some of these things. Look, I think that we would both, Edward, admit that a lot of this is just simply about Trump. You know, if Trump's involved, they don't care. That a lot of people don't want to look at a different perspective here. But what frustrates me is the legacy media, because they should at least, and they're not, and the dishonesty is just incredible, even in the last few days with the government shutdown, they cannot bring themselves to put any of this into perspective in any effort to be fair. They don't really care about that, which is why Barry Weiss is doing what she's doing at the Free Press, and I think it's really, really good. But I think they simply don't care that the double standard exists. They have to be aware of the double standard. They don't care because of Trump.
Well, you're right. And that extends to a lot of other policies that are, you know, really a return to sanity. And you would think that Democrats would have, and the media, of course, would have more interest in policies that make sense, whether or not they're because of, you know, Trump's support. But we don't see any of that. We in fact, don't see any alternative. All we have from the left nowadays is Trump is bad. You know, in California, all we have is Newsom is bad. In all of these cases, the media and the Democrats, that's their entire platform. Trump is bad. Newsom is bad. It's the whole idea that you personify this instead of looking at the actual substance of the policies and the actual things that really happened is very troubling.
Yeah, it's really troubling. I don't think it's getting any better. You know, you mentioned in your column, is it pronounced Andy? No, it's NGO. I follow him. He's got a ton of followers on Twitter. But here, that was a guy who was censored quite a bit when all this was happening, right?
He was censored. He was also beat up a couple of times. He had to leave Portland, his hometown, and no one knows where he is right now for his own protection. And, you know, that goes back to, you know, they're pretending that Antifa, that there's just one block of disruptive behavior, and it's really just because of ICE, and it's all very recent. They've been burning down, you know, and attacking buildings in Portland for many years, certainly going back to 2020. And the media will not acknowledge that, even though it's obvious that this has been going on. And if you look at any alternative media, if you talk to anybody that's on the scene that's willing to give you the true story about what's going on, and again, it's all very well documented because we have iPhones and we have cameras nowadays, and they're date-stamped videos, and you can see the chaos and mayhem that's been going on for years on a very wide scale in Portland, and they're pretending, and the whole media is complicit in this, that it's something that's very recent and very limited.
It's really unbelievable. You know, there's so many of these things. Look, I talk about, and we've covered, obviously, because we were the nucleus for a lot of this nonsense with defund the police because of Mike Brown and Ferguson in 2014. But, you know, if you watch, I always tell people, if you watch the fall of Minneapolis, Liz Collin, who was a journalist in Minneapolis who did this documentary, I can't remember her partner's name, you watch the first 10 or 15 minutes of that documentary. I don't know if you have, Edward, but you'll come away with a completely different perspective on that entire situation. And we were never shown those videos from inside the convenience store. They were just, I mean, is that censorship or an unwillingness on the part of the legacy media to tell the truth, or both? I mean, that's outrageous. Well, and that's how these stories get out there.
It's censorship by omission, which is a very powerful form of censorship. You know, if you select your what you're going to report very carefully to support your point of view, you can get away with a lot without actually lying. You know, they lie as well, but it's just one level up in terms of sophistication. You just pick and choose what you're going to report on, and you can tell any story you want.
I've talked about media bias for a long time, and you are absolutely right. I've really focused on how they do that, and it's just, you know, it's an underhanded way of not being truthful with the story. And sometimes that, you know, maybe it's not even the reporter that's doing it, but it's the editor, and it runs up the chain, which is even more troubling. Edward Ring, he's at the Center for American Greatness. Great stuff. Thank you, Edward, so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you. Anytime.
Appreciate it. We have a Thursday edition of Sue's News, which is coming up in the next hour. You know, we were talking about Andy Ngo, who is a great independent journalist. He's out there on the X, formerly Twitter. But listen to what happened in Portland last night. I don't know what the hell is going on in some of these cities, especially with the cops. I always want to support the cops. But listen to this journalist who said she's attacked. Antifa, you know, is running wild there. And she tells her story.
Last night, I got assaulted, and I immediately ran to a Portland police officer and said, "This is my assault suspect." Three officers just standing there watching me try to hunt down this suspect. And imagine my anger when I go online after doing all of that about an hour ago, and I see Portland police put out a bolo asking for the public's help in identifying my assault suspect. The Trump administration needs to start treating Antifa like ISIS, the terrorists that they are, and put an end to them here for good.
Well, I think they're not too far away from that. And then there's this. I have to share this afternoon. And, you know, I do this feature, and it's going to come up here in about 2 hours, audio cut of the day. I've done it for many, many years, trying to, you know, pick the one audio cut, or sometimes I cheat and I have two or three that really stand out, and there's never a lack of audio. This one could maybe be video if we had the video component worked in, because this takes place at a school board meeting in Davis, California, where the school board lectured teenage girls that they should feel comfortable undressing in front of boys. So there was a parent who is named Beth Bourne. There's a funny little title for this about the Bourne identity on hotair.com. But she is the chair of the Yolo County Chapter of Moms for Liberty. So she goes up to the microphone at this school board meeting, and she starts to strip during the public comment. And you'll hear, I'm going to play the audio of what it sounded like, but she starts taking her blouse off, and she just starts basically telling the school board what's happening, making her points, but she's stripping the whole time.
I'm here today to talk about the policies you have for the locker rooms in the junior high schools, so Emerson, Holmes, Harper Junior High. Right now we require our students to undress for PE class, so I'm just going to give you an idea what that looks like when I undress. So right now, this school district is saying that depending on a child's transgender identity.
Now, I just want to stop right here, because when this is happening, and I'll fill in the blanks here on the play-by-play with the video, the look of horror from the board members is just awesome. And it's not unlike what happens. We play this audio over the years. In fact, I've featured it as audio cut of the day. When you have parents that are up there, and this is very similar, at a school board meeting, and they read verbatim from the books that the school board has approved for 7 and 8 year old kids or something like that, and it's content that they're too embarrassed to hear at a school board meeting. That's always fun, but this is similar.
They can pick which bathroom they want. So we have, right now at this school district, we have children self-identifying into different bathrooms just based off of their...
No, you cannot.
I have my bathing suit on. Excuse me, this is allowed.
We're going to recess.
I'm going to finish my comments, or you are violating my First Amendment rights.
Oh my gosh, so she... Actually, it happened twice in the same meeting. And you could hear, she did have a bathing suit on. So the board took a break the first time. She came back to the podium to finish her remarks. She began to remove her top again, and the trustees shut the meeting down altogether until the cops came and removed her from the room. Now the board, according to reporting, wants to explore options with what they say are the inappropriate actions by Ms. Bourne. One of the trustees told the newspaper that's reporting on this, The Vanguard, that the board is now considering its next steps. We're going to be meeting about this, about what to do in such situations. I know our superintendent is going to be speaking with counsel to see what can be done, because it's very inappropriate for anyone to be coming before the board and behaving in such a manner. Are you kidding me? So a grown woman comes to the board to speak her piece about the shenanigans that are going on with these poor girls who are forced to strip down, not to their bathing suits, right? Not to their bathing suits. So that's inappropriate for Ms. Bourne to go up there. But the position that the parents can't even object when their teenage and pre-teenage daughters have to disrobe in front of boys and be present when they get naked, that's cool. That's fine. Nothing's wrong with that whatsoever. Ed Morrissey wrote about this on hotair.com earlier today. I mean, that's outrageous, right? But here again, this would be a good situation for the legacy media to actually cover a story and put it into the perspective that normal, everyday Americans would see this through. I mean, that's what's so absurd about this, because they won't even report on this in the legacy media because it doesn't fit their narrative, right? So she goes up there, and she, by the way, Ms. Bourne says she's exploring her legal options as well. She says she's tried for 3 years to get her point about how the Davis School Board leaves girls vulnerable to predators without any change of policy. You know who she needs to talk to? J.K. Rowling. She's pretty good on these issues.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.